So I first learned the word transmogrified from Calvin and Hobbes. Now you may remember the comic strip by Bill Waterston, which ran from 1985 to 1995. Calvin, age 6, was part Christopher Robin and part Dennis the Menace. And his stuffed tiger, Hobbes, regularly came to life in Calvin's active and sometimes too mischievous for his own good imagination. Together, Calvin and around the universe and considered the big philosophical questions of the day and occasionally annoyed the crap out of his neighbors and his exasperated parents. One day, Calvin built a transmogrifier. Now, to us, it was just an upside-down cardboard box with dial drawn on the side. But to Calvin and Hobbes, it was a machine that could turn them into whatever they wished. Eel, baboon, bug, dinosaur, toad, and even worm. While everyone else still saw a cardboard box and a little boy and a stuffed tiger, Calvin and Hobbes saw themselves transmogrified or transformed in a surprising manner. I think that sometimes we forget that we can transmogrify things, especially in religious communities. We often joke because otherwise we would cry about the 7 deadly words of the church, but we've always done it this way. And that can be about everything from how the coffee is made, to how the hymns are sung, to how we understand the principles and ethics of our faith. In fact, let's look at our principles. And you can look at the screen or in a hymnal. In a gray hymnal, it's about 8 pages in, and the teal, it's about 11 pages in. And there they are, our principles. Our organizing statements of who we are and what we believe, nicely laid out in a list. We even tend to number them, quote them by number. Our 5th principle calls me to fight for responsible gun control legislation. I'm doing 3rd principle work learning about Hinduism. I'm a 7th principle guy, so I invest in renewable energy. A nice, handy, well-ordered list. Heck, you can even do a 7-step program, right? Isolating each principle and focusing on them one at a time. And many congregations, maybe this one too, has experienced 7 principle series, right? There they are. Nice and neat, ordered, isolated, everyone an individual. But that was bugging my colleague Ian Riddell. Ian wrote one day, "I'm in a bad mood that our principles are in a list, so I transmogrified them." And this is what he devised. Instead of an ordered list, we have a wheel. No numbered principles, but rather a different pattern of organization, a different way to see them. As you can see, I hope in the center, the axle, I wish I had a pointer, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. It's where we start, where we come from, where everything else moves from. And then encompassing it on the rim is the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. And then the spokes are the other 5 principles. The ways we understand ourselves and our work in the world, the ways that we act in the world because of who we are and whose we are. So what does it mean? How would we approach our faith, our work, and our connections to other human beings and our very sense of the divine if we were willing to transmogrify how we think of them? So let's start with this section right there. Ah, got it. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Alone, it sounds good, right? It's the cornerstone of Unitarian Universalist Service Committee and every social justice action we take, both within and outside of Unitarian Universalism. We take this call on faith, surely. These things all sound good and are preached by the major religions, and who doesn't want justice, equity, and compassion, right? As a bullet on the principles list, it's a positive and a bit of an of course. But there's something missing. Unitarian Universalists are so good at questioning things, but we forget to question what's underneath our principles. They're written on the page, literally. And so they're there, set in stone. And often we ask, what? What do they mean? Or how? How do we affirm and promote them? But rarely do we ask, why? Why are they important for us to affirm and promote? And when we see, when we change how we see them, we suddenly have a way to ask the why of our principles, to interrogate the deeper meanings, to see the connections between the individual and the world. Why is justice, equity, and compassion so important? Because if I, as an individual, am inherently worthy of dignity, then so must every other individual. And if we're all connected, how can I possibly think it's right to be like the pigs in Orwell's Animal Farm and say some animals are more equal than others? How can I not see that the compassion I hope you'll show me might be worth showing to someone, to everyone else? This principle calls us to be in the state of becoming just, equitable, and compassionate, but we are never just. If we remember who we are and where we come from, we are always becoming just. The justice, equity, and compassion we get from the world and see in the world helps us become individually more just to others and to ourselves. Now, confession time. I'm going to admit a bit of my own theological struggle. I don't always believe that the things I know to be true also apply to me. In other words, sometimes it's easier to declare that the inherent worth and dignity of every person in this interconnected web of which we are all a part means that there must be justice, equity, and compassion for you and other people. But it's hard to accept for myself that I too am part of that interconnected web. And that I am as inherently worthy, so that justice, equity, and compassion should also be for me. For you, absolutely. For everyone else in the world who faces injustice, oppression, and hatred, of course. For me, I'll just sit back. And when the principles are in a tidy list, it's easy to dismiss myself as not really part of it. It's easy to apply these things to the people I love, the congregations I meet, the larger community. But this wheel, Ian's pesky new way of looking at things, is not letting me off the hook. It's not letting us off the hook. Instead, it's reminding me of what David Bumbaugh wrote. In this interconnected existence, the well-being of one cannot be separated from the well-being of the whole. That ultimately we spring from the same source and all journey to the same ultimate destiny. In other words, y'all can't grow into harmony with the divine without me, and I can't grow into harmony with the divine without you, nor all of us without each other. We aren't isolated. While Paul Simon's line, "I am a rock, I am an island," is more singable, John Donne's poetic, "No man is an island," is much more accurate. We are not islands. Instead, we're part of what James Luther Adams called the brotherhood of man, but which I prefer to call the family of humanity. And it's usually at this point that I start singing in my head, "We are family." Okay. Sorry. It's this kind of questioning, asking the why of our principles and seeing the deep human connection that led our organization Standing on the Side of Love to realize that the words of its name actually did not show compassion to every person, especially the person who cannot stand and finds it difficult to be included in the activities of an organization that insists on that metaphor of standing. Thus, the organization changed its name to Side with Love. And while they were making a shift, so too did Jason Shelton, who has officially changed the name and lyric of his song, formerly Standing on the Side of Love, it's 1014 in our teal hymnals. He changed it to Answering the Call of Love. And in changing those lyrics, the song becomes more active, more engaged in the work. We're not just standing by and watching love happen. We are answering the call of love. Wow. And so it's this connection, right? From the individual to the collective and back again. It helps us answer why. Why do we affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations? Because it's about me, and it's about you, and it's about all of us, none of which can stand alone, so it becomes about us. As Frederick Buchner famously said, it's the knowledge there can never really be any peace and joy for me until there is peace and joy finally for you also. So I think you can see how this starts to work. Yeah. If we interrogate the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, well, we have a similar sense of connection. How can we have a world community without all the individuals in it? As Marjorie Bowens Wheatley writes, if in recognizing the interdependence of all life, we strive to build community, the strength we gather will be our own salvation. If we join spirits, the pain of our aloneness will be lessened, and that does matter. I think about that table blessing. It calls us to be thankful for the many hands that make a meal possible, the farmers who grew it, the workers who picked and packed it, the truckers who transported it, the grocers and stock people and cashiers who sold it, the cooks who prepared it, the waiters who served it. Our food comes from all over the country, all over the world. We cannot know for sure where the orange that I wish I had in my hands right now has been, or who handled it. So how can I not want to affirm and promote a world community when that world community feeds me? And that's just one example. When we see ourselves as both individual and a part of something bigger, we begin to see others the same way. That's not always easy. Sometimes we get too self-focused, and we see every act, every word, every decision as just about ourselves. We know what that looks like. Or we get too outwardly focused and feel lost and used up and burnt out. Our transmogrified principles, looking at the same on the outside but feeling new and different on the inside, reminds us that we are both and. We are both individual and a part of community. So we see how some of these work, right? But how might we understand some of the more individualistic principles, like encouragement to spiritual growth? That seems awfully like an individual process. And on one hand, it is, right? My spiritual path is not your spiritual path. As we like to say, we need not think alike to love alike. In this room, I suspect we have Jews and Christians and atheists and pagans, and Buddhists, and who knows what else. But even this principle, a vital one to be sure, both benefits from the going out and the coming in. It It's your path, right? Individual. And this congregation encourages you on that path. The path you choose is modeled by others out there, those who have gone before, those who are going through it now. Their wisdom informs yours. And here's the secret. Your wisdom informs theirs, too. So why do we affirm and promote this? Why? Of course, being the question this wheel asks us over and over. And I think the answer is in the fact that humans have been ritualizing in both solitary and communal ways since humans started doing rituals, and healthy exploration contains both. I like what Parker Palmer has to say about this. Solitude does not necessarily mean living apart from others. Rather, it means never living apart from oneself. It is not about the absence of other people. It is about being fully present to ourselves, whether or not we are with others. Community does not necessarily mean living face to face with others, but rather it means never losing the awareness that we are connected to each other. It's not about the presence of other people. It is about being fully open to the reality of relationship, whether or not we are alone. And so on. Each principle, connecting to the self and now to the interdependent web and back again, in areas of truth and justice, community, connection, process, growth, compassion, leading us from the familiar form that says what to the transmogrified form which asks why. Once you see it, it can't be unseen. Now we can't think of our principles without thinking about the wheel and the spokes and the interconnectedness. We have transformed our way of thinking about it. We have transformed it in a surprising manner. We've transmogrified our principles, our ethics, and our faith. Maybe that's the real message. Not that we become something new overnight, but that we and our world and how we act in it is deeply and inexorably interconnected and interdependent. And that's not just how we act inside these walls, but how we act outside them. What we bring back inside these walls. How we are with each other. Yeah, some of us can be really inwardly focused and some outwardly focused. And we forget the gifts of both receiving and giving. Of love, compassion, energy, forgiveness, encouragement. It reminds me of the Buddhist meditation. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be whole. May you be filled and may we be filled. Some of you already know that this was set to music and is also in our teal hymnal. And it was set to music by the guy who started this all off, Ian Riddell. How about that? It really is a circle.